Welcome to Heart of Iowa, a program featuring a patchwork quilt of alternative viewpoints and information you can use. I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson, and I'm exploring the world of alternative finance, how you and your loved ones can steer clear of stock market bubbles and opt out of the too-big-to-fail institutions and still have a safe and thriving financial future. Later in the show, we talk with Murray Williams, Chief Operating Officer of the Iowa Credit Union League. How does a credit union differ from a bank, and how does that difference affect everything they do? Stay tuned for that interview to find out. My first guest, however, hails from Washington, D.C. If you have an IRA or individual retirement account, you don't have to invest it in the stock market or government bonds. You can invest in people doing awesome things like growing vegetables in inner cities and building affordable housing, a kind of investing called impact investing, which is what Justin Conway of the Calvert Foundation specializes in. To start out, I asked Justin to define an older concept which has been around for several decades and usually does involve the stock market.
If I had $1 million, if I had $1 million, well, I'd buy...
Welcome to the show, Justin.
Thank you for having me.
Justin, can you explain the basic concept of socially responsible investing? What is socially responsible investing?
Socially responsible investing looks to recognize that environmental, social, and governance factors are really part of investment decisions alongside the financial considerations that we have. And so they consider both the financial needs of an investor and the impact it will have on society. There are certainly many names for socially responsible investing, from faith-based investing to impact investing is a more common term these days. There are lots of ways to say it, but it's really focused on trying to have a financial return because it is investing, after all, in that true sense of the word, but also really taking into account what that money is going to do in society and the impact it is going to have on the world.
I've known and heard about socially responsible investing for a while, and I know that a lot of people's places of employment have options that might include a mutual fund that would be socially responsible. What kind of investments would be part of such a fund, and what types of stocks would be excluded from a socially responsible investment fund?
So one thing about socially responsible investing is that since it's based on the investor and what their concerns are, everyone does it a little bit differently. Historically, many folks have thought of socially responsible investing as focused primarily around screening. So you're either including or excluding certain companies from an investment portfolio. And so historically, evolving from what have been called sin stocks of alcohol, tobacco, and gambling, many investors in the past and still very actively today screen those out of their investment portfolio. Other popular screens have been folks trying to screen out investments that support the military. Certainly, oil and gas and energy is a sector that many folks are concerned about, both from an environmental perspective, but also a social perspective. And so that still happens today, but the focus in the industry in recent years has been less on screening things out as trying to identify the positive actors and screening things in to investment portfolios. That's both trying to find corporations that are leading the way and have the best management, governance, and environmental and social and community practices, And it also includes trying to identify newer alternative ways to invest more on specific impact areas, like, say, affordable housing or community development. So you see these socially responsible investing taking place on both the corporate world and trying to push corporations to improve their practices. And a lot of that happens through engagement and shareholder advocacy. And that certainly has a big impact, because when you change a practice at a corporation, that is something that all the other corporations take notice of. But it also, the impact is happening at the more community level as well, through community or impact investing, where you're trying to invest outside of the corporate world.
Well, you've mentioned investing outside the stock market, and I came across this just by accident. I had been doing a little bit of investing just for fun in Kiva.org. That's Kiva.org. You know, I'd started out maybe being a donor for Finca, which is based on the model established by the Grameen Bank. And then I found out that there was an actual opportunity to invest in such a way. In other words, you're not just giving money to help small entrepreneurs with $100, you know, start up their business, but you're actually investing in people, and you can get that money back anytime you want. So, well, I was talking to my financial services advisor. I'm self-employed, so I have to do all this stuff myself. And I was like, I just don't want to invest in corporations. I'm sick of corporations. Corporations have way too much power in our society. They rule our government. You know, I just didn't want anything to do with the corporate stock market. And plus, stock market had been taking us on a pretty rocky road. So I said, I just wish there was a fund that I could invest in, that I could just invest in people, like I do at Kiva.org. You know, people who are maybe wanting to actually build their stock of cattle, like from 5 to 6, you know, cattle. And they want a little money to build that, and I can help them out. And so my advisor said, you can. There is such a fund. And that was One World Note. I was talking to a Mennonite financial advisor, and this was a fund that the Mennonite agency Everence set up with, it turns out, you guys, Calvert Foundation. And so can you tell me a little bit more about this One World Note that I'm investing in?
Sure, absolutely. So broadly, I think, you know, within socially responsible investing, the type of investing you're talking about is often referred to as community or impact investing. And so that's investing in specific communities and impact in areas to advance economic development in those areas while earning a financial return. And it's very much, like you said, a complement to philanthropy, in that it is really focused on solving specific social and environmental issues and challenges, or helping to address them. But it's a complement in that there is a financial return component to that. And so a number of firms have sprouted up because there's the thought that philanthropy won't be able to do it alone. And so hopefully some of this community and impact investing can work alongside that to, you know, help create jobs and provide critical community services and protect the environment and support the latest social entrepreneurs and innovations. So it is a new field that is growing and part of socially responsible investing, and one I think you'll certainly hear more about. The One World program that you mentioned, it's the One World Community Investment Program that's sponsored by Everence Financial. They're a Mennonite mutual fund or broader financial services firm. We've partnered with them over the years because we have a strong mission alignment with the firm overall. But they're using some of our expertise in raising capital from investors and then deploying it into more specific communities, both here in the U.S. and around the world, through organizations in these communities that we have identified as being strong on the social impact side, really working in that community, trying to address the pressing issues that they have and stimulate economic and social development in those communities. but are also worthy of being invested in. And they might not produce the high financial returns that many of us look for in the stock market, but they're usually able to provide a stable return and really help a community. It's all done through Calvert Foundation's Community Investment Note, which is a fixed income fund, meaning the investor chooses the term of their investment and the rate of financial return they'll receive, and then we're pooling that money and getting it out to nonprofits and social enterprises that are really having this strong positive impact on the ground. So that's what the Community Investment Note does, and we've really appreciated partnering with Everence Financial on making it available to the communities that they serve.
So you invest in these nonprofits, but usually nonprofits are just kind of black holes. As far as your money goes, I mean, they constantly need money to perform their mission. How do these nonprofits then turn around and pay back the investment?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because you're right in the traditional sense, putting money with a nonprofit, it's a donation, they use those resources, and then it's gone. The nonprofits and social enterprises that we are able to invest in and lend money to all have a revenue generation model, so that they can take money from us on loan, use it for specific projects, and then return it to us and ultimately our investors with some financial return, all while having the impact, you know, using those funds to have a strong impact. So, for example, a group could be using it to finance affordable housing in a community. We all know that housing is a foundation for a family, and what they're able to do, and there are lots of relations to education and overall health of a family based on having safe and stable housing. And so if we're able to develop affordable housing units in low-income communities, as those projects start to cover their costs, then the organizations on the ground are repaid, and we can be repaid as well from those funds. The same thing would be the case if we're investing either domestically in a small business or internationally in a micro business or a micro entrepreneur. You mentioned Finca and Mohammed Yunus, Grameen Bank, before, where we're lending money to a person or business for a period of time so that they can use that as working capital and develop their business and products and services, and then they're able to pay their loan back. And so we're working in all 50 states and around the world. There are programs like this in pretty much every country out there. So
great.
You know, that's how it works. It does require a revenue generation model for a nonprofit to access this type of investing.
Okay. So I'm imagining also, I just heard about this entrepreneur in Milwaukee who's developing a gigantic urban gardening system that has been, you know, actually very profitable and has grown and grown, and that sounds like the type of thing that might be invested in. Am I right?
Sure. I think you're probably referring to Growing Home.
Yeah, yeah.
In the Milwaukee area, yeah. And so there's a connection there. Again, as I mentioned before, Calvert Foundation, we have about 7,000 investors right now, and we're helping connect all of those investors to great groups and organizations on the ground. So one of them is a Chicago Community Loan Fund. They're a nonprofit community development group based in Chicago, but work in the region broadly on housing, community facilities like schools and healthcare facilities and small businesses. And they've provided financing that's been provided by us and other foundations and investors and some government funds as well to support Growing Home and others. So, you know, that's certainly an exciting area, and one of the areas that we're really looking at on how we can create healthier communities. Growing Home is one of the leading examples of that, and their efforts in Pennsylvania and California, New York, New Orleans area, around the country, trying to figure out how we can help provide financing to get access to healthier foods in low-income communities.
Yeah. And the point about affordable housing seems this is an area that the for-profit industry simply has not been able to address. There's not the kind of money that the for-profit businesses are interested in developing low-income housing. And so many communities just get built up with these McMansions and, or, you know, quick turnaround sales and end up lacking the affordable housing.
Yeah, one clarifying thing that I would point out is that a number of the affordable housing developers, many of them are nonprofit, and you know they have that specific focus, but there are also some for-profit housing developers that have done great things for affordable housing as well. Some of them have focused on it specifically because they've shown that it can be a profitable business while having a social and environmental impact. And we've worked with some of those. And then there's certainly broader developers that have, you know, made affordable housing part of their portfolio, even if it's not a focus of theirs. But the nonprofit and for-profit distinction in our world is blurred a little bit, and that's not always the most important factor that we look at. It's really what is the impact that this organization is having on the world. You know, corporations aren't doing as much of this, but there are also smaller for-profit companies that are doing some really innovative and great things for communities.
I see. You are listening to KHOI's Heart of Iowa. I'm your host, Greta Anderson, and I'm talking with Justin Conway of the Calvert Foundation, a leader in the new field of impact investing. Let's return to the interview. Do you think this movement of impact investing has been a response to some of the failures of the business as usual stock market investments or people's dissatisfaction with how the investment business has gone? I mean, we were dragged through a crisis by failures in the investment system.
Absolutely. So certainly the community development, impact investing, and socially responsible investing, many of us have been around for well before the latest financial crisis came about. And fortunately, most of us have survived pretty well through that time. And that's because many of us weren't just focused on the financial returns and quarterly earnings and all at the expense of other factors. We certainly wanted to make sure that we were around for the communities that we serve. And so I've been focused a little bit more on risk management and the social impact and really knowing our customers. And we've certainly seen a stronger interest overall since 2008 with people being disheartened with just investing in the stock market and not only losing their money, which had a huge personal impact, but just being completely dissatisfied with the state of corporate leaders and, you know, just feeling disconnected from that world. And so overall, socially responsible investing has seen a surge of interest and money flows in, whether that's in mutual fund companies or, you know, the growing segments like community investing. So that's been exciting to see that folks have recognized that they want to rethink who they are. They've started by aligning their individual purchases at grocery stores, and maybe they're buying hybrid cars or whatever it is that they've figured out how to do as a consumer. But they're also seeing that they also vote every day with how their money is invested. And I think people are starting to see that tie a little bit more. And so that's great, because that is certainly giving some wind to our backs here on the things that we're trying to do and use investing still as a tool to make money for investors, but is one that's really addressing some of the challenges that we're facing and having a positive impact in the communities we live and care about.
Yeah, oh, that's great. Going back to my experience with Kiva, they were touting the fact that these people who use the money that you've invested in them wisely and give back exactly what they've promised to give back on schedule is something like 97% or even higher.
You know, we've seen that pretty much across the board in the industry in terms of lending in low-income communities and having a high repayment rate. Here at Calvert Foundation, we've been around since 1995. lending in low-income communities in all 50 states, having an impact in all 50 states and over 60 countries around the world. And our, while all of our investors, so we have 100% repayment rate to our investors in us, our underlying portfolio has over 98% repayment rate over that time. And we're able to cover any discrepancies between what we're actually getting paid and what we're actually paying our investors with our loss reserves and other support that we've been able to raise over the years from philanthropic and other sources. So our investors have always gotten all of their money back, and our portfolio has performed, you know, really well. And I think that after the financial crisis, when many of our portfolios were still performing well, you know, that certainly got the interest of more actors and broader financial services, kind of not acceptance, but interest and kind of exploration around community and impact investing, because it showed that this could be done in a risk mitigated way.
Why is that? Why do you think the repayment rates are so good?
I think that for many people, this is one of the only ways that they're able to access financing. They're not able to get it from some traditional sources because they don't meet that credit standards that have been developed, and have been developed for good reason. But there are a number of lenders like Calvert Foundation, the other community development financial institutions that have developed expertise and really know these communities well, are able to serve them in more unique and tailored ways, provide, you know, hand-holding or technical assistance or whatever might be needed, and realize the real potential in these people, and that they don't want handouts necessarily. They want access to financial services that we all have, and can understand that they are obligated to pay this money back with a return. And I think there are ways that we've figured out how to work in low-income communities, explain that, make sure that it's transparent and understood to the people that are taking on these monies, and that's our duty as responsible actors here. Provide any education that is needed, and people have, you know, really been happy to participate in that, and so it's worked. And we know our customers at a deep level and have been able to work things out with them based on their individual situations. So that's a great positive success story, but one of our challenges is that takes a lot more work. Right, there's a lot more knowing your customer, underwriting, due diligence, being on the ground in those communities and knowing what the day-to-day or weekly, monthly challenges they're facing are. And so that's why it's a little bit more expensive. And so it doesn't generate the profits necessarily that the broader world might be seeking, because it's hard work to do what it is we do and do it in a responsible and successful way in the communities that we serve. So we're trying to figure out how to continue to innovate and both make this accessible to more communities, but also get broader investors interested and involved in supporting their communities or the communities they care about.
The Grameen Bank concept was that there would be a group of borrowers and they would all have their individual business plans, and yet the whole group would be underwriting the business. And so the success was cheered on, if not nudged along, by the group as a whole. And to my knowledge, that has not occurred in the U.S. Is that right?
So certainly that model has been really successful abroad, and that's where it's well known. I think that the group lending or village banking model really makes sense in a lot of communities. So some communities where, you know, that might not be the approach that is needed or are best suited. But in terms of group lending, and has it made it here to the U.S.? It has. In more recent years, we're talking small micro businesses that are looking for less than $25,000 in capital to really get up and running. And we've seen Grameen, who has shown that the group lending model works really well in Bangladesh and other places as well. They've come to the U.S. here, and they started in New York City in the boroughs. And so they have very similar group lending models where they get a number of entrepreneurs together 8 or 10 or so to come together as a group and understand their business plan, support each other in a number of ways, and ultimately decide on who gets financing from Grameen America. That's their name, Grameen America. So they're in New York City and have been for a few years, and that's gone well, and they're expanding to other cities throughout the U.S. as well.
Oh, that's very interesting. Okay, so how do people, our listeners, get access to this new way of investing that invests in people rather than corporations?
Sure. So there are a number of ways to get involved. I'll first start with Calvert Foundation. There are a few ways to invest with us. One is online through our partner microplace.com, and you can see not only our investment note, but other options as well that have a very low minimum and can be done online. And these all generate a financial return, too, but have a strong social impact. Additionally, you can invest in us directly by filling out a check and application, and then you also can invest in us through a brokerage account. So if you're working with a financial advisor and you have an IRA or an account at any type of brokerage firm, you can invest in our note through the fixed income options there, and we're certainly happy to help you figure out how to make that happen within an account alongside your other investments. And more broadly, what I always recommend people start when they're trying to figure out how to have an impact with their money is start with their own banking relationship. So we all need a bank. It might as well be a good one. And so there are community development banks and credit unions all throughout the U.S. There are hundreds of them. And so they offer the same products and services as traditional banks. But the money that is held at those banks and credit unions is really at work in those communities. So I encourage folks to find a good bank in their area.
Okay. And if people's companies do their investing for them, we have a big program here in Iowa called IPERS for public employees. I guess they should just check out with their companies to see whether their retirement investments can go into a non-traditional fund.
Yeah, it's a great question. So when we're talking about retirement accounts and pension plans and things like that, where we're really focused is trying to get some of these broader socially responsible investing options on the table for investors. So again, perhaps mutual fund companies or social responsible investment strategies that are still investing in corporations but add the environmental, social, and governance components I was speaking about earlier. And that's because they look more like what you would find in those retirement account plans, and so they meet the legal and regulatory hurdles. The more private investments in directly in communities or for specific impact areas, that is something that has not done in more employer-sponsored retirement accounts to date. There are a few examples, but that really hasn't been made broadly available, though it's an area that Calvert Foundation and others are looking at. But we are available in individual retirement accounts, so not the employer sponsor plans, but to the extent that individuals have their own self-directed individual retirement accounts, IRAs, then they can invest in Calvert Foundation and some of the other community investment note programs that are out there.
I've heard of Calvert Mutual Funds. Is that the same thing as the Calvert Foundation?
That's a great question. So the Calvert Investments is a socially responsible mutual fund company. We share the same founders and a long history. They are a mutual fund company. They have about 40 different mutual funds with different strategies and different asset classes. And they have a great approach to trying to, on screening and shareholder advocacy and pushing corporations to become better actors. Calvert Foundation, though, is completely separate from them. We were started by the same founders, started on the same street, Calvert Street in D.C., where the name comes from. But we've been a completely separate organization since 1995 with the focus on trying to connect investors to the communities and impact areas that they care about. So we think that we complement what Calvert and investments and other folks are doing in the corporate world and trying to have a change there, with our approach to trying to have a more direct impact on specific communities. So we think we're complementary strategies within socially responsible investing.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to say, Justin, about this field of community investing that you are part of?
Well, I hope people have heard something that sparks an interest. I hope folks are overall trying to figure out, you know, the impact that they are having through the financial decisions in their lives, from what they purchase to how they invest, and talk with folks here at Calvert Foundation or others in the socially responsible investing field to try to figure out how they can have their money at work, earning a financial return, but also contributing to the economy and overall world that they want to live in and they want their future generations to live in as well.
Yeah, you know, as you've been talking, I've been thinking about churches' investments, and a lot of churches have an endowment fund of some type. And I know probably when socially responsible investment came around a couple decades ago, I'm sure a lot of churches switched over to socially responsible investing portfolios, but they might want to revisit their portfolios in light of this new development of community investing.
Sure, and faith-based investors started socially responsible investing before it had a term, and they certainly started this more community lending that has taken place in the last decades. So they have been the pioneers here, guided by their faith principles to have an impact and figure out a different way to put their financial resources to work for the betterment of the world. So they have been the leaders, and so they will continue to be, and if there are others that are out there that are looking to get more involved, would love to help make connections to the right people for them.
Neat. Well, thank you so much, Justin, for taking your time, and it's been an enlightening conversation.
Well, thank you, Greta, and good luck to you and the station.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
All right. Bye. $1 million.
I'd build a tree fort in our yard. If I had $1 million,
we could just go up there and hang out.
Like, open the fridge and stuff.
That was Justin Conway of the Calvert Foundation, a firm that specializes in impact investing, a way that you can direct your retirement dollars to worthy causes and still have that money guaranteed to be there when you do retire. I asked Justin for some resources for those who are interested in finding out more and have posted those on our website.
Oh, yeah.
If I had $1 million.
Now we turn to credit unions, and specifically credit unions in Iowa. I drove down to Des Moines to visit with Murray Williams of the Iowa Credit Union League. This is Greta Anderson on KHOI Community Radio. With me here is Murray Williams. He is the Chief Operating Officer of the Iowa Credit Union League, which is the trade association for Iowa's credit unions. 116 of the 117 credit unions in Iowa belong to this association. Murray, could you tell me, what is the basic difference between a credit union and a bank?
Sure. The main difference with credit unions is our structure. So our ownership is different from banks. Whereas banks are owned by stockholders, credit unions are owned by their members. So credit unions are not-for-profit financial cooperatives. So we're a cooperative in our structure, and it's the membership that owns us, the membership that runs our volunteer board of directors, and it's the membership in which we serve in our local communities.
Well, that makes a huge difference, because we've heard a lot these days about banks making huge profits off of us in various ways, and credit unions have not been a part of that.
No, and that's a great point. Because the members are the reason we exist, everything we do is to try to benefit them. So when the volunteer board gets together with the management of the credit union, if they decide what the rates are going to be or what their fees are going to be charged or whether they start a new product or whether they build a new branch, everything is to benefit the member. Whereas a bank, what drives them, and this is rightfully so, they're a for-profit company, it's to drive profits. It's how do I make more profits for our shareholders? So the fundamental difference is really stark between serving shareholders or serving your members.
So a credit union is a very local organization, is that correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. Credit unions, by definition, are local. You can only serve people within a common bond, which is either a city or a community in which you live, or a factory or a school or a church community. It's some sort of a common bond, an affiliation that provides you the ability to be a member. However, many people who don't know credit unions may think that they're not eligible for membership, and the vast majority of credit unions are geographic in nature. So, for instance, if you live in the Ames or surrounding community, there would likely be several credit unions that you'd be eligible for just by the fact that you live in that community.
And what typically do you have to do to become a member of a credit union?
Really, you just have to first find a credit union that you think would be a good place for your financial home. That would be the first thing. And credit unions provide all of the same types of products and services that banks would. Once you do that, you would go to your local credit union. And you'd say, I'd like to open up a membership. And their staff would walk you through the process. But essentially, it's opening up a share account or a savings account. So to be a member, you have to have a share of ownership of the organization. But typically, a share account is a $5 or a $20 opening of a savings account, and that essentially is your share. One of the other unique things about credit unions compared to banks is whether you have that $20 in the credit union or whether you have $20,000 in the credit union, you have an equal ownership or an equal say in the organization. Whereas with banks, if you have a large stake of the stock or you're in an influential board position, you have a significantly larger say.
Are your funds safe in a credit union?
Yes. In short, yes. Credit unions are insured by the federal government just like banks are. In a bank, some people would see that the term FDIC being the federal insurance for banks. Credit unions have the equivalent of that through the NCUA, the National Credit Union Administration. So it's an equal government agency to the FDIC. It insures deposits, savings deposits of credit union members up to $250,000, which is also equal to banks in the FDIC. So yes, your funds are equally as safe and sound in a credit union, and no member in Iowa has ever lost a dollar in an Iowa credit union because of that federal insurance.
We've just been through a very difficult time in the financial sector. The last 5 or so years
Absolutely.
Have been marked by a lot of chaos in the banking industry. I was curious, to what degree were the credit unions insulated from that, and to what degree did they actually suffer?
Well, again, based on our structure and our local focus as cooperatives, credit unions fared extremely well by comparison to large banks during the Great Recession and continue to do exceptionally well today. We are probably at one of the high points of the strength of credit unions, especially in Iowa, as well as the interest in credit unions from consumers generally. And part of that is because of the great things that credit unions are doing, and part of it's because people are fed up with their banks. And I don't blame them. So from a credit union perspective, because we only serve people who are local within our community, we are always lending to people we know and small businesses that we know and farmers that we know. And by that fact, we're able to have a higher level of quality in our loan portfolios. And we didn't do some of the risky types of things or subprime types of decisions that were made in the for-profit banks where they may have been making some of those to try to chase some larger profits. And so credit unions in Iowa have been well managed over that period of time. We've always traditionally been more risk-averse in terms of making sure that we're lending locally. And Iowa, just as a state, has weathered well in the recession, and so that helps also. But credit unions have seen substantial growth here in Iowa and around the country in loans and savings. Our delinquency rates are still very low, and we continue to see more and more people wanting to be members of our credit unions.
I want to get to the subprime thing that you mentioned shortly, but a lot of small businesses during this recession have had a difficult time finding loans from banks. Are those types of businesses turning to credit unions?
Sure. Well, I'll give you a couple of statistics just on loans generally. So from a consumer loan perspective, Iowa's lending in 2012 in credit unions increased 10.3%. Our loan portfolio grew 10.3%. And nationally in credit unions, it grew 4.6%. So just in general, Iowa credit unions are lending at a very high rate and at a higher rate than banks are as well. You mentioned small businesses. From a small business perspective, over the time of the downturn or the recession, credit union business loans grew more than 50%, whereas bank loans for small businesses actually declined over that period of time. So I think you hear in the media that banks say that, you know, they've had to restrict their lending, they've kind of pulled back, and a lot of consumers and small businesses haven't been able to get the loans that they would have been able to before the recession. The truth of the matter is credit unions are still lending, and credit unions are finding good loans out there, and they're continuing to grow. And that's part of the discussion with member business loans or commercial loans, where credit unions are actually trying to lend more to small businesses at a time when banks are pulling back.
And you mentioned also being risk averse. Mm-hmm. Does that mean the individuals that you serve you look at very closely, or how does that work?
Sure, exactly, yeah. Well, lending inherently has risk. I mean,
right.
the whole process of lending has risk involved. It's really the question of, you know, to what level of risk are you looking to get into, and then also what's your motivation. So for credit unions, one of the old sayings in credit unions is the best investment you can make is a loan to a member, because that's the whole purpose of a cooperative, is to be able to pool your funds and to be able to help each other out to be better collectively. That's the whole concept behind it. So credit unions, when they started and today, were a group of people with like minds and some sort of a common bond that would pool their savings and then judge each other's credit worthiness to be able to lend them funds to better themselves. And really that concept is still the same today, even in large sophisticated credit unions. The process and the structure is still the same. So the whole purpose of a credit union is to lend those funds back out. The difference is we know who the people are that we're lending to. Even in a large credit union, we know the communities with which we're lending. We're not lending in other parts of the world. We understand the small businesses and what their needs and desires are. And again, so we're not just looking at a credit score, but we're actually looking at the integrity of the person, their willingness and ability to repay. And that's, I think, one of the fundamental differences.
So you're not pushing people to, for instance, take out housing loans like some banks did during the years before the crisis.
No, absolutely. That's you know, when you're a cooperative or a member-owned institution, the idea of trying to put someone into an unfavorable financial position only hurts the institution, because it hurts the collective. It hurts the cooperative. And so absolutely you want to provide loans and funding to those who need it and who can benefit from it. But to try to push somebody into a loan that eventually they're not going to be able to repay, you know, who suffers from that? Everyone else. The cooperative suffers from that. Short-term gain, if you will, of putting someone in a subprime mortgage loan may work for other types of institutions, but it certainly doesn't work for credit unions.
Now, turning to mortgages, when a person buys a property through a credit union and then you hold the mortgage, what do you do with that? The banks, we now know, take those mortgages, they compile them, they slice and dice them, mm-hmm. and say they're better than they are and things like that.
Absolutely.
They go into a big pool.
Sure.
What do you do with the mortgage when you get it? Does it go anywhere into
sure.
a larger structure
sure.
or does it stay in that particular credit union?
Well, I can't speak on behalf of every credit union, but just statistically as a group, credit unions hold their mortgages by and large. So the last statistics that we saw, roughly 70% of all of the credit union mortgages stay on their own books. They hold all of those mortgages.
What are the drawbacks of working with a credit union? Some people I've spoken with prefer a big bank setting because they have family in other parts of the country, or they might like to travel and they like to have their credit represented around
Absolutely.
The world.
Absolutely. Well, I'm biased, but I think the credit union is the choice for everybody. But I'll tell you some of the misnomers that the people may have about credit unions. One, because they are local, because they are typically smaller than your average size bank, people have a perception that they may not have the reach that a larger institution may have. But I will debunk that and say that credit unions today, by and large, have every sophistication that a bank would in terms of online banking, which you can do all around the world, mobile banking, credit and debit cards. They're typically aligned with an ATM surcharge-free network, not only in Iowa, but around the United States. A lot of the types of services that credit unions provide today, you don't have to be near a brick-and-mortar institution anymore. And a lot of young adults that I know rarely go to their institution, whether it's a credit union or a bank. And credit unions have learned to be very accommodating to their members' needs in that respect. So I would say that whether you travel a lot, whether you have family all over the country, a credit union can still definitely meet your needs.
That's good to know. If all of Iowa's financial business were a pie, mm-hmm. how big a piece of the pie would credit unions have? How big are they here?
We have 10% of the total assets of the state. So if you consider a pie, you have 90%, which is banks, and 10%, which is credit unions. What we say is it may be a small piece of the pie, but it is a significant enough piece that it creates a check and balance against the banks. So if people were to complain that they think that their bank fees are exorbitant or that the rates could be better, think about a world if credit unions didn't exist. We serve as a check and balance for banks every day. And so we like to think that even if you're not a credit union member, you're actually benefiting from us being in existence, because banks are obligated to some degree to be competitive with the world of credit unions. And it's something that we're very proud of.
Are credit unions as big nationwide as they are here? Can you answer the pie question for the national?
I don't have the exact numbers right now. It's a little less than in Iowa. I think it's roughly around 7% of mm-hmm. the total assets. However, the last statistic I saw, the largest banks, the two big to fail banks, their assets are larger than the entire credit union industry combined. And so from a scale standpoint, you have a couple of institutions that are larger than 7,000 institutions. And so you can see the scale difference just in that.
A little David and Goliath action.
Exactly. And I think I failed to mention, but in Iowa, something we're celebrating, just at the end of 2012, we went over the 1 million member mark in Iowa. And so roughly one in every three Iowans is a member of a credit union, which is really exciting. Again, so there are some people that may have gotten a car loan, if you will, from a credit union, but we still have to go and really educate them as to what the true benefit is. They may have just heard from a coworker or a family member, oh, they may have a better rate, why don't you go check them out? And yet they don't truly see the value of making it their financial home. And that's something, even with the 1 million members that we have, we're always striving to make those relationships deeper, make people more educated.
Interesting. Just curiosity, what does a church-owned credit union look like?
Well, credit unions come in all shapes and sizes. And a couple of credit unions in Iowa, for instance, they literally may have their only location would be within, I'll use the church, but it could be within a school or within a manufacturing plant. And if you are somehow affiliated with that organization, or a family member of yours is, you're eligible for membership. And they may only be open once or twice a week. They may be volunteer driven. They may only offer some general savings and some basic personal loans. Now, that being said, the structure is the exact same as a large, sophisticated credit union. The regulatory environment in terms of being federally insured and the types of laws and regulations that they have to follow are similar. So you're still banking, if you will, with a safe and sound institution, but it is absolutely back to the roots of what a cooperative is, which is a very, very small group of individuals pooling their funds and lending them out to each other.
Do you have a limit on how much you can lend in relation to how much you are holding?
We do from a business lending perspective. So commercial loans or business loans, credit unions have a limit today on what they can lend, which is 12.25% of their assets. So of their assets, only 12.25% can be used to provide small business loans today. Prior to the mid-1990s, there was no such limit, but there was a large battle with the bankers, and the banks are always trying to compete with credit unions, and one of the restrictions that they were successful in putting on credit unions is the ability to lend to small businesses. Credit unions today feel that that is an arbitrary limit. We feel that the recession proved that credit unions can be responsible lenders, that at a time when banks are maybe pulling back or required to pull back on their lendings, that credit union small business loans are actually growing and that we still have low delinquency rates. And so we have a bill that we're pushing in Congress that would increase that member business lending cap to 27.5%, which essentially would double or roughly double that amount. You still have to meet certain criteria as a credit union to be able to increase that amount. But we think it is a very prudent thing to do with no cost to the taxpayer whatsoever to provide additional jobs and additional loans, not only in Iowa, but around the country.
Is there a House bill number for that or a Senate bill?
I don't believe there is today. There was in the previous session. I think they need to introduce one again. But it's something that's certainly a priority for our credit unions and something we are advocating for very strongly and have actually had bipartisan support. One of the challenges, as you know, with Congress is just trying to be on the radar with so many other things that they're dealing with right now. And something that we feel is very sensible and logical and at no cost to the taxpayer sometimes can still fall through the cracks. You have to have a very large voice to get through that clutter, and we're doing the best that we can.
I would ask what the corresponding limits are on banks, except most of their assets are fictional.
And they don't have those. They don't have those types of limits. There are definitely certain advantages to being a for-profit bank over a not-for-profit credit union, and certainly the ability to not have a cap on their commercial lending is one of those.
Is there anything else you'd like to add about credit unions?
Well, I would just, once again, if you have ever considered changing your financial institution or looking for an option that is locally owned, cooperatively run, but still federally regulated and safe and sound, definitely look at your local credit union. I believe it provides all of the same types of products and services with the advantage of a great level of member service and the ability to really feel that you're a part owner of your financial future.
Well, thanks a lot, Murray.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
That was Murray Williams of the Iowa Credit Union League, and I'm Greta Anderson of KHOY Community Radio.
If I had $1 million, 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 I'd be rich.
You've been listening to Heart of Iowa, a program featuring a patchwork quilt of alternative viewpoints and information you can use. Today we explored how you can bank and invest in such a way that it benefits real people instead of the corporations that already own a good chunk of our country. We spoke first with Justin Conway of the Calvert Foundation about a new kind of investment called impact investing, whereby investors can become part of worthy enterprises that address needs both here and abroad. We then spoke with Murray Williams of the Iowa Credit Union League about nonprofit cooperative banking through credit unions. For more information, go to our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. Click on the Shows tab and select Heart of Iowa. Websites and contact information of the individuals are listed there. Music we heard included The Fisherman by Leo Kottke from 6 and 12 string guitar and If I Had a Million Dollars by the Bare Naked Ladies from their CD Gordon. I've been your host for today, Greta Anderson. Thank you for listening and see you again on the radio.